Welcome to The Will Evans Show. This is a podcast meant to teach you everything you did not learn in school. And today we're going to be talking about renting versus buying, how to buy a home, everything like that. And then I'm going to be answering your questions. Let's go. When you think of the American dream, what do you think of? A lot of people think of the land of opportunity. They think of owning a home or owning a business, and all those things are right. But one thing you have to be very careful of is to not let this American dream become the American nightmare. Later in the show, we're really going to break it down on what I mean by that. And so first, I want to look at the difference between buying and renting. And so obviously, the end goal is to own a home. I want you to be a homeowner, but I don't want that home to own you. I want your home to be a blessing, not a curse. And here's one of the phrases that drives me nuts. I hate when people say owning a home is cheaper than renting a home, because that is the biggest lie that that society has sold to you. Oh, just go get a mortgage because rent prices are going crazy right now. Just get you a mortgage. But what they don't tell you is the first week you move in, your AC goes out or your roof starts to leak. You know what happens when your AC goes out or your roof leaks in your brand new home? You're going to be paying $10,000 for a new roof, $5,000 for a new AC unit. Now you're $15,000 in the hole in your brand new home. Compared to renting, yes, it may be the same price as your mortgage, maybe more, maybe less, depending on where you're renting from. You shouldn't be renting the Taj Mahal. But if that stuff happens in your apartment, your landlord fixes it. Obviously, if it's your fault, you may have to pay, but if your AC doesn't work, if my AC does not work in my apartment, I have a guy that I put a work order in, and usually within a few days, it is fixed with no cost to me. So that is why I hate when people say owning a home is cheaper than renting. And look, I'm not against you buying a home, because me and Kendall are in the process of, we're looking for houses, we're making sure it's within our budget, we're doing all of that, but renting is buying patience. And so let's talk about buying a home. What does that look like? How do we do it? What are the biggest things we need to remember when we decide to buy a home? Well, the first thing, you gotta be on the same page as your spouse. So you and your spouse need to have the same idea when it comes to looking for a home. The second biggest thing is your mortgage payment cannot be more than 25% of your take-home pay. So after taxes, but before investing is your take-home pay. So 25% of your take-home pay after taxes, that's your take-home pay. And so this will then determine how much you put down, right? So we're not necessarily looking at, hey, you have to put 10% down, you have to put 15% down. My biggest thing for you is you do not want your mortgage to be more than 25% of your take-home pay. And now we can look at other things that may factor into this. PMI, private mortgage insurance. If you do not put 20% down on your mortgage or on your house, then you have to pay private mortgage insurance, which all that does is it is insuring the lender that if you do not pay, they have insurance on that. That is what private mortgage insurance is. And here's the thing with private mortgage insurance. This is a rough estimate. PMI is about $75 a month per $100,000 borrowed. is how much PMIs. So that can add up real quick. And so if you are able to put 20% down, that's obviously the goal. You want to put 20% down because you want PMI gone. But the biggest thing is, again, 25% of your take-home pay is how much you want your mortgage payment to be. You also want your mortgage to be on a 15-year fixed mortgage. And there are very, very clear when I say this. There are a very few exceptions of a 30-year mortgage. But no matter what, it is a fixed mortgage. So your most common mortgages are your FHA loans and your conventional loans. FHA is going to be more expensive. You have a lot more fees tacked on. The reason it's so common is because a lot of first-time home buyers take out an FHA loan because you only have to put, I believe, 3.5% down. So you barely have to put any money down to get into a house, and that's why it's very popular. But your best bet is going to be your conventional loan. So those are the only two that are even worthy of being talked about. Again, you don't want to go for the FHA because it's going to be more expensive. There's a lot more fees that go into it, and it's meaning you're only putting 3.5% down, and that is a pretty low number. But here's some mortgages that we're not even going to discuss, because if you hear these, if your lender is telling you about these mortgages, you need to run, fire that dude, get out, get off the phone, get out of his office. If he brings up any of these, you need to run. I'm going to run through them really quick. An adjustable rate mortgage. That's an ARM. Sometimes it's called an ARM mortgage or an ARM loan. Adjustable rate mortgage, it means your interest rate's going to fluctuate. Interest only mortgage. That's just dumb. A reverse mortgage, very popular for the older generation. People would take advantage of older people and say, hey, here's a reverse mortgage. So instead of you paying us, we're going to give you a monthly payment. But most of the time, that's at up to an 18% interest rate. Another one, subprime mortgage, run. Balloon mortgage, run. You're not going to use your parents' house as collateral or your business as a collateral for your mortgage. We're going to run from that. The United States Department of Agricultural and Rural Housing Service mortgage, or most people know it as the USDA loan. We're not going for that either. Accelerated and biweekly payoff programs, not going for that either. Any mortgage with a prepayment penalty, we're not going for that either. And so if you hear any of those mortgages, you need to run. The ones you need to remember is a conventional loan. That's the only kind of loan that is worthy. So the next thing, what's one thing that you have to have when it comes to buying a house? You got to have a good real estate agent, right? So what you need to do, you need to interview at least 3 real estate agents. What you need to figure out is their commission, how communication happens. Are they working with a team? Is it going to be them? Are they going to pass you off to somebody that doesn't know what they're doing? What does communication look like? And the biggest thing you need to find out is how many houses do they sell a year? Are they selling 2 houses? Did they just get their real estate license? Like, those are the people you do not want in your corner. You want someone that has experience, that knows the market, has been doing it for a while, and they actually sell houses. And so the next question that I get all the time, okay, Will, if you have all these things listed out that I have to do, well, when is the right time to go from renting to buying? Well, I'm glad you asked. So if you're going to be renting, you have to get out of debt. You have to be completely debt-free, and you have to have a fully funded emergency fund before you take the next step into home ownership. And the reason for that is it goes back to what we've talked about on the show a number of times, is that financial peace. You want this house to be a blessing, not a curse. And this is where, at the beginning of the show, when I said you don't want it to be the American nightmare, you want it to be the American dream. When you get into this house, you want to have an emergency fund. So if something does happen, you have money in the bank to pay for it, and you want to be out of debt because you want to have margin within your budget. And we're doing 25% of your take-home pay. So if another 25% is going to debt payments, you're going to be house poor. That is the worst thing you can do, is to be a house poor, is all your money's going to other places and it can't go towards your house. So you have to be out of debt, have to have a fully funded emergency fund before you can move into this buying phase. And then once you have those two things done, so you're out of debt, which is baby step two, and you have a fully funded emergency fund, which is baby step three, you can do one of three things in order when it comes to investing, baby step four, and then saving for a down payment. So you can start investing, which is baby step four, 15% of your gross income going into retirement, and then you can start saving for a down payment on the side. Or two, you can invest up to the, if your company has a match, get the company match, whether it's 3% or 5%, and then after that, you can do baby step 3B, which we haven't talked about a whole lot, but baby step 3B is saving for a down payment. So you're doing your company match, but it's not a full 15%, and then you're doing the rest to save for a down payment. Or three, you can hold off on investing altogether to pour the cold to saving for a down payment. And with this option, you want this to be really less than 2 years. If you can save for and have a nice down payment within 2 years, that I'm okay with that. But again, if you have a company match, it's really hard to just throw away that free money now that you're out of debt, have an emergency fund. You can do the 3-5% and then still be poor in the cold to saving for a down payment. And I'll tell you what me and Kendall are doing. I said that we're in this same phase of where we're trying to buy a house, we're looking, we have a real estate agent, we're doing all this stuff. What we are doing is through Kendall's work at the hospital, she gets a match to her 403B, which is like a 401k. She gets a match, so we're doing the company match, and that's it. We're not investing any other way. We're pouring the cold, saving for a down payment. We're trying to have as much money in the bank in order to put down on a house. And one thing that I want to hint on that me and Kendall are also doing is we're doing something called a no-score loan. What that means is I paid off all my credit cards. I paid off my car loan. We paid off Kendall's student loans. Neither one of us have an open line of credit. We don't have any credit cards. So neither one of us have a credit score. It's undeterminable. If we try to pull our credit, it's undeterminable, or some people will call it an invisible score, a ghost score, because it's undeterminable. And we've talked about this on an earlier podcast, and I got a lot of questions about this because people said there's no way you can buy a house without a credit score. Well, I am proving you wrong right now. I've already been in talk with Churchill Mortgage, who's out of Nashville. They are all over the nation. They are great for doing no-score loans. When you call them, they will know exactly what you're talking about. And so don't believe the lie that you have to have a credit score to buy a house, because I'm in the process of buying a house right now without a credit score. You're listening to The Will Evans Show. Hey guys, it's Will. I know this show is all about what you didn't learn in school, but for some of you, you need a little more personalized help, and that's what Evans Financial Coaching is. I specialize in helping people pay off debt and build wealth. If this is you, I've put my contact info in the show notes. So please reach out. I'm here to help you. Evans Financial Coaching, creating paths to financial freedom. Welcome back to The Will Evans Show. We've been talking about buying a home, how to do that. I just told you about how to buy a house without a credit score. So if you have any questions about that, feel free to reach out to me, because I love proving people wrong on this topic. You do not have to have a credit score to buy a house. But hey, I need a huge favor from all of you. If you can like this podcast, you can subscribe to it, follow it, And please leave a 5-star review. I love reading the 5-star reviews. If you got a 1-star review, just put it on the next podcast you listen to. We don't want those here. They're not. If you don't have anything nice to say, just move on. But yeah, follow the show, subscribe, like it, do all those things. And hey, share it on your social media for me. Just put it on your story. I know Apple and Spotify for sure have a share button that you can share it directly to Instagram, Facebook. So if you could do that, that'd be a huge help for me and this show. And I've been putting questions out there on my Instagram for people to slide up and submit their questions for the podcast. And so we've had a bunch of those. And so this question comes from Instagram as well. And this person writes, if I want to save up for an engagement ring during baby step 2, how should I go about that? And so I've actually gotten this question a couple times, because when I start talking about, oh, you have to be doing everything you can to get out of debt, you're working a side job, you're doing all this stuff, and then like, whoa, I've been dating this girl for 6 years, 7 years, and I'm ready to finally pop the question, but I'm in debt and I'm paying it off, and it's going to take me a minute before I can do this, but I want to propose. That is okay. I am not against you getting married in debt, but that does come with some. You do have to be wise. You have to be smart about how you do this. We're not going to overspend on this engagement ring, that whole thing where you have to have 3 months of your salary for an engagement ring. Come on, give me it. Like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to be reasonable. We're not about to drop $10,000 on an engagement ring. I didn't spend $10,000 on Kendall's engagement ring, and we have had a happy marriage, a happy life so far. I guess y'all could ask her later, but I've had a great life, a great marriage so far, and it has not been dependent on how big the rock she has on her left finger. So again, if you're in baby step 2, you're looking at, even this goes for an engagement ring and planning for a wedding. You can pause baby step 2, pause paying off your debts. Please still pay your minimum payments. Don't go deeper into debt. Because we've already drawn the line that we're not going to borrow money anymore. So we're going to pay cash for this engagement ring. So we're going to save up cash as quick as we can. We're still gazelle intense in this. And even for the wedding, if you're having to help pay for the wedding as well, you can do that. But you're going to do it you're going to be very reasonable about it. You're not going to be having the average wedding, I think, is like $27,000 in America right now. You're probably not going to have a $27,000 wedding if you're in baby step 2. Just not possible. Me and Kendall didn't spend half of that, and we had a great wedding. You can ask Ben. He was in it. I think it was a great wedding. But yeah, that's what. So engagement ring, wedding, stuff like that, you can pause baby step 2. Same thing a lot of people say with a baby as well, like, oh, we want to be out of debt before we have a baby. No, you don't have to do that. Like, you don't have to wait till you're out of debt to have a baby. Babies are awesome. I eventually would like to have kids of my own. But if I was still in debt, I wouldn't say, oh, I have to wait to get out of debt before I can have kids. That's not how it is. But we are going to do everything in cash. So this engagement ring, make sure you are paying cash for it. Also, congratulations, hopefully, is in order soon. But as always, a big thank you to Ben for making this show run. Remember, y'all can reach out to me on Instagram if you have any questions. You can email me at ask@evans-fc.com. I'm going to put those in the show notes. And remember, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. This is The Will Evans Show.